Welcome to the Rob at Dusk podcast. I'm Rob Blasi. Today, I got to talk to Gabe Brown. He is a farmer you may have seen in the documentary on Netflix, Kiss the Ground, talking about regenerative ag, no-till versus tilling soil. I learned a lot. I hope you will too. Enjoy. 3, 2, 1. Mr. Gabe Brown, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Good to be with you today.
Now I've looked you up, or I found you from, I was watching the documentary with my wife, Kiss the Ground, and it's about farmers farming better. And I'm a first generation city kid. Both my parents grew up on farms, and they look at me sometimes going, maybe we should have stayed on the farm. help me out here and learn more with like the big picture view of what you guys are doing and then how it impacts us.
Okay. I'll make this story brief, but I did not grow up on a farm. I'm the opposite way. I grew up in the city.
Okay.
But took an interest in agriculture when I was in junior high school, got involved with BOAG and FFA and fortunate enough that met a gal who was from a farm, and we got married. And after college, we moved back onto her parents' farm, and now they had farmed very conventionally, a lot of tillage and monoculture crop production, the use of a lot of synthetics, you know, fertilizer, herbicides, etc. Well, in 1991, we were able to purchase a part of the farm from them and started farming on our own. And I had more or less learned to farm from my father-in-law. But one thing about me, not being from a farm, I didn't have any preconceived notions. So I had read a lot, and I'm an avid learner. I just can't learn enough. And so I had heard about no-till, studied it, and I thought, boy, this is the way to go. So 1993, I sold all my tillage equipment and went 100% no-till.
So you went all in right away.
All in right away. It just made sense to me. And realize, as a young producer starting out, I didn't have the money, you know, any extra money to buy this no-till drill. So I had to sell the tillage equipment to come up with money to buy the drill. So that was a good thing, because then I was all in. I had to learn as I go. Well, the years 93 and 94 were very good crop production years, and I thought, boy, this is easy. 1995 came along, and the day before I was going to start combining my 1,200 acres of spring wheat I had in that year, we lost 100% of the crop to hail.
Oh.
And with no hail insurance, that was pretty devastating, pretty tough. We were able to pay interest to the bank, but not pay back our operating notes. 1996 came along, and we lost 100% of our crop to hail again. I started to diversify the crop rotation. Of course, banker wasn't willing to loan me as much money, you know, because I was going backwards. So my wife and I took off farm jobs, and I started on a mission, you know, how am I going to dig myself out of this hole? 1997 came along, and we dried out. There was no crop to be combined in this area. So that was devastating. 1998 came along, and we lost 80% of our crop tail. So I lost basically 4 years of crop income in a row.
Wow.
And I tell people that was extremely difficult to live through, and I dug ourselves into a pretty big hole. But it was absolutely the best thing that could have happened to me. Because think of what happened. You know, I was already no-tilling, and then the hailstorms come, and the hailstorms knocked all this crop down on the soil surface. Well, that protected the soil from wind erosion, water erosion, and it started to proliferate the biology in the soil. I noticed it was much easier for me to stick a spade into the soil. You know, water was infiltrating much faster than it had before. And I tell people that the good Lord, through those 4 years, was just showing me how natural ecosystems function. And, you know, I didn't know it at the time. I was simply trying to scratch out a living and keep the banker at bay so he wouldn't foreclose on me. But I was really learning the principles of nature. And so since that time, I've been on this journey of learning, and I've been very fortunate. I've been exposed over time to a lot of very intelligent individuals who have helped educate me. And we've learned together about these principles. And now it's become known as regenerative ag. And, you know, it's, you can't hardly pick up a farm publication anymore without hearing about regenerative ag. And, you know, I've been in contact just in the last 2 months with Biden's team and Trump's team. And Tuesday I was on a Zoom call with Prince Charles.
Oh, wow.
All wanting to know more about regenerative ag. And that, what I tell people is, I don't care where your interest lies. If you're interested in farm profitability, regenerative ag is certainly the way to go. If you're interested in revitalizing our rural communities, regenerative ag can help. If you're interested in clean water, and if you're interested in water quantity, regenerative ag can help. If your interest lies in climate change, regenerative ag can certainly help, because through regenerative ag, using these practices, we are able to take massive amounts of carbon out of the atmosphere and put it back into the cycle, into the soil where it belongs. Also, and we're really seeing this come to bear during this COVID crisis, if you're interested in human health and nutrient-dense foods, regenerative agriculture is certainly the way to go, because we are working with a number of researchers right now and doctors who are proving, we're doing research proving that products grown, whether it be fruits, vegetables, proteins, as far as meats, grown and raised on regenerative soils are higher in nutrient density. So I tell people, we can all agree that these are good things. Let's come together as society to work on these things and to bring regenerative ag to the forefront and get these practices adopted over a wide percentage of the landscape.
So what's the main difference then between regenerative ag and the term in the documentary Kiss the Ground on Netflix? You hear a lot of till versus no-till. Like for us city folks, help us out here.
Okay. In regenerative ags, there's six principles that are constant. And no matter where I travel all over the world, no matter who I talk to all over the world, these principles are constant no matter where I'm at. So I tell people, when they ask me, can this be adopted anywhere? Absolutely, yes. These principles are the same. And these principles, very briefly, are number one, context. Nature always acts in context. You know, here I am in North Dakota. There's a reason bananas don't grow in North Dakota, okay? We don't have the climate for it, okay? Too often in agriculture, man is trying to impose his or her will on nature. We're trying to grow things or raise things out of context. We have to understand our context. Second principle is least amount of mechanical and chemical disturbance possible. In nature, nature doesn't till the soil like we do in agriculture. Yes, there's earthworms and burrowing rodents, etc., that will move the soil up and down, but not the intense tillage that you see in agriculture. And nature, yes, there's chemical disturbance in that. Plants put off chemical signals all the time, but not this copious amount of these herbicides, fungicides, pesticides that we're using in agriculture today. Third principle is armor on the soil surface. Nature always tries to cover the soil because those plants need that soil, the biology in the soil, need that soil temperature to be constant for optimum growth of themselves and then eventually the plants. So nature is always trying to cover the soil. You know, a lot of gardeners, for instance, say, oh, I get weeds in my garden. Well, chances are you're tilling your soil and nature is just trying to cover the soil. Okay. Next principle is diversity. Where in nature do you find monocultures? You don't find monocultures in nature. Nature is always very diverse. If you look at prairie ecosystems, for example, it's not uncommon to find over 100 different species of grasses, forbs, and legumes. You know, the only place you find monocultures is where man has either put them or man's lack of stewardship has caused monocultures to thrive. The next principle is living root in the soil as long as possible throughout the year. Nature always tries to have a living plant in the soil because it wants to, that living plant will take in massive amounts of carbon and other nutrients out of the atmosphere through photosynthesis. It'll use part of that for growth and then pump the rest into the soil to attract biology, and that biology then will provide the plants with the nutrients it needs. And the final principle is animal and insect integration. You do not have healthy ecosystems without animals and insects. And it's very alarming the rate at which we've lost biodiversity of animals and insects on the landscape. So often in agriculture, we take the animals off the landscape and put them in confined animal feeding operations, and plants and animals evolve together. Many times you hear people saying, oh, we need to remove animals from the landscape, and because they emit methane and all these harmful gases. Well, that's just a lack of understanding, and it's simply not true. I will use this to prove that point. Historians tell us that there were several hundred million, at a minimum, bison roaming across North America pre-European settlement. Okay, that's more bison in North America than currently there are livestock, by that I mean beef and dairy animals, on North America now. So if it's truly the animals that are causing this, why wasn't it caused centuries ago when we had more bison?
Yeah, why didn't you see
the
spike of it?
And what they don't take into account is there's methanotrophs. Methanotrophs are organisms that they're free-living organisms that consume methane. They occur naturally in nature, and so as an animal is grazing, emitting methane, these methanotrophs are eating that methane. See, the problem lies in that we remove the animals from the land, put them into these confined animal feeding operations, and that's where the issue comes. It's not the cow, it's the how.
I like that. So then within your specific farm, you with your biodiversity, like how many different things are you growing at any given time?
Yeah. So on our ranch, we have approximately a 5,000-acre ranch near Bismarck, North Dakota. And we grow a wide variety of different cash crops. It varies each year. We grow corn, we grow spring wheat, oats, barley, peas, winter triticale, winter wheat, hairy vetch, wide variety of different cash crops. But then we also grow cover crops. And we use those cover crops to cycle these nutrients out of the atmosphere and into the soil. That really drives the nutrient cycle, the water cycle, so we're able to produce very profitable cash crops without higher inputs, without all these synthetic inputs. Now, the other thing we do is we have a beef herd, so we have cow-calf pairs. We have grass-finished beef. We have a flock of ewes, and we grass-finish lamb. We raise hogs on pasture. We have 1,400 laying hens on pasture. We raise broilers on pasture. We have bees and produce honey, and we produce some vegetables. So not to mention all of the wildlife that we have. Tremendous amount of wildlife on this ranch, even though we are actually located in the jurisdiction of the city of Bismarck. And that's come over time. You know, right now it's deer season in North Dakota. And I can look out any evening, I can look out my front window and see at least 50 deer grazing right in the fields in front of my house. If you build it, they will come. As you have all this biodiversity of plant species, you're going to have more insects, you're going to have more wildlife, and it's just a win-win situation.
So with your farm, and then I remember in the documentary, there was your, at the time, at least your neighboring farm did more traditional farming, and it, there was a stark difference in how the land looked. Can you help describe that to people?
Sure. So in North Dakota here, central North Dakota, no-till is now a common practice. When I started no-tilling in 1993, I was the probably the first person in this area to go 100% no-till. And now it's pretty common. At least 75% of the farmers in this area no longer till the soil. So that's a good thing.
That helps everybody the out, difference, I'm sure.
Pardon me?
I'm sure that helps everybody out then.
Well, sure it does. And it's good for the ecosystem, good for the environment. The difference comes in that they will grow maybe two or three different cash crops, primarily corn, soybean, spring wheat. Those are the common three. What they don't do is have grow the wide diversity of cash crops, plus they don't do the cover crops, and then they don't integrate all the livestock. So I tell people, if you're going to be successful at regenerative agriculture, you have to become very intentional. You have to realize that you need to follow all six of these principles to really be successful. And a lot of producers, farmers, ranchers just are not willing to do that.
Why is that?
Yeah, I get asked that question a lot. Same question Prince Charles asked me. the thing is, realize that it's a lack of education. Okay, farmers and ranchers today get it bombarded on them that, oh, you have to produce higher and higher yields to feed the world. And the way to do that is use all these fertilizers, use these chemicals, use these pesticides to, you know, prevent insects and kill insects. Do all of these practices to get a higher and higher yield. But they're not being educated as to how ecosystems function. They're not educated as to the fact that if they do that, it's actually destroying their soil ecosystem. Their soil becomes less healthy. They're going to have to buy more and more of these expensive inputs. I tell people this, okay? I can grow respectable yields in my cash crops. Do I have the highest yields around? No. But I tell you what, I will guarantee I have the most profitable yield. And I will take profit over yield any day.
Absolutely.
Now, the other reason... Oh, go ahead.
I'll just say absolutely. Where it's like, that's going to be my next question. Is like, is there an economic issue with between the two?
Absolutely there is. Dr. Jonathan Lundgren, he's a world-famous entomologist, owns a Dysis lab in South Dakota, did a study on this with one of his grad students. And they were looking at insects, insect biodiversity, and pests. And what he found is that the regenerative farms had significantly less pest pressure. And that's because of all of biodiversity. But also the regenerative farms, although they had lower yields, they were 78% more profitable.
Wow.
I mean, that's a huge difference.
Absolutely.
Huge difference. Yep. Now, one of the other reasons that a lot of farmers and ranchers do not adopt these regenerative principles is simply because of the federal farm program. The federal farm program, as a rule, is very antagonistic to regenerative agriculture. Because, if you're a farmer and rancher, and I don't want to get too deep on this, but you can prove your yield over time. You record that with the government, and then you're able to buy what's called revenue insurance. In other words, based off your past yield history, you can buy insurance on that crop. Now, the government underwrites about two-thirds of the cost of that. So it's most farmers and ranchers do that. But when they do that, they're tied into producing just those certain crops, and they're tied into the management practices that are dictated by federal crop insurance. Well, you take people like myself, I no longer accept any government subsidies or payments of any kind. I don't think that the urban public should have to subsidize my business. I shouldn't be in business if I need those subsidies, right?
Right.
We're not subsidizing Ma and Pa's restaurant down on Main Street, so why should I be subsidized?
No, absolutely. There's a joke for years where it's like growing up when it's like, I was thinking about becoming a farmer and it's not going to grow corn, but there's a lot more money in not growing wheat.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So if it's more economical, it seems pretty straightforward here. Is it just that there's the culture and concept people have of what they've learned over years on how to do things? They're stuck in their ways.
The other thing is regenerative agriculture, I say, is a thinking person's game. You have to have the power of observation. You have to be able to go out. Say you see a certain weed, as many people call them, I call them forbs, but weed coming in some of your fields. Well, what is that weed trying to tell you? That weed is there for a reason. Either there's a nutrient lacking in that field that weed is cycling. You have to learn how to observe. A lot of farmers and ranchers have lost that power of observation. You know, they get into this routine and they get very comfortable and they know the government subsidies are coming. Don't get me wrong. Farmers and ranchers put in a lot of hours and work hard. I'm not saying that, but they're working against nature and they need to work with nature. And once they do that, they find that life is much, much more enjoyable and profitable.
Interesting. Have you ever heard of those crop boxes they're using more in like urban areas, like even on like the rooftops of buildings?
Oh, sure. And I get calls all the time from gardeners in big cities, and you know they're farming and they've got their little crop box or garden there, raised bed garden, and the same principles apply. Now, obviously, you're not going to have livestock in that situation, but you can add a bit of compost in that, and you can certainly have flowering plants there that attract the beneficial insects. And so the same principles can apply in a flower pot on a deck in New York City as apply on a 5,000-acre ranch in North Dakota.
Interesting. So then in the documentary, it also talked about, like you've mentioned it briefly here too, is the effects on climate change, or at least capturing the carbon back into the ground. How big of a impact, like, because there was like a radar map they showed on the documentary saying, because the goal is like 5% of farmers are doing no-till farming today, and the goal is like by 2025 to have it up, I think, what was it, 50%?
Yeah, that was their goal. But in some areas of the country, it's much higher than that, as I said, here in North Dakota. And no-till is just a small part of it. Grazing animals is a very large part of it. We're working on several projects right now with teams of scientists that are documenting just how much carbon we can take out of the atmosphere and put into the soil by doing these what we call adaptive grazing practices, these regenerative practices. And it is really extremely encouraging to see the results that we're getting. You know, we have to go back to working with nature instead of against her. And when we do, this will affect all society, you know, very positively from not only a carbon standpoint, you know, We'll be able to cycle that out of the atmosphere, put it back in the soil. But it's also going to help tremendously for water use. And, you know, water is becoming a critical issue in many areas, well, all around the world. Same with water quality issues. We'll be able to clean that up, because as people, farmers, ranchers, accept these practices and put them in place, that soil is much healthier. We have a much reduced input use, and because of that, we don't end up with all these phosphates and nitrates into our watersheds. So it'll help society tremendously. And then perhaps the most important, of course, is the nutrient density of the food. You know, it absolutely amazes me. I travel extensively, and it amazes me what people will eat. I just, I contend that 99% of the people in this country have not tasted nutrient-dense food. They have no idea what that's like to eat that. And once they eat it, they're not going to want to go back to to what they were eating.
So then if I wanted to try your nutrient-dense food, I'm here in the Denver, Colorado area. How would I get a hold of that?
Yeah, so my son, his business is called Nourished by Nature. And you can just Google Nourished by Nature, and he ships anywhere in the continental U.S. And all you do is type in your zip code, and it'll give you a price delivered straight to your door.
Interesting. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yep.
No.
Yeah. Right now with COVID, he's having a bit of a challenge keeping supply on hand because the demand is so great.
Oh, I can imagine that. Absolutely. We'll have to check that out. So then, question then, because my wife and I have talked about this for fun, because she's, you know, she likes the idea of like, we have a house in the city right now, but she's always liked the idea of getting more property and having a more ranch style house where you have chickens and almost, I would call it a pseudo farm, because you're not really farming, but you know, you got more property. If for a couple like us, if all of a sudden we said, hey, we want to kind of get into this, what would you suggest?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a great question. What I suggest is, number one, educate yourself. Educate yourself as to these principles and as to these regenerative practices. There's piles of YouTube videos out there. My partners and I, we have a business called Understanding Ag and Soil Health Academy. Soil Health Academy is our education arm. We're going to be releasing a online Regenerative Ag 101 course here within the next 6 weeks. And that'll be available online. They can look up soilhealthacademy.org to find out more about that. And you need to educate yourself first as to these principles. And then I tell people, just do it. But make sure it fits your context and your lifestyle. You know, don't make it a chore. This is very easy to apply. If you're a home gardener, these principles are easy to apply. One of the big mistakes most gardeners make is they go out and till their soil. Well, that's absolutely the worst thing you can do for not only the soil, but for your health as well. Because once soil is tilled, you destroy the home for biology. There's more microorganisms in a teaspoonful of healthy soil than there are people on this planet. Think about that. Yet how many of us as gardeners or as farmers think about that? We go out and we till, and that destroys the home for the biology. Well, it's that biology that cycles the nutrients that feeds the plants. If you do not have healthy soil that's biologically active, you're not going to be producing nutrient-dense food. And so as a gardener, you need to realize that. You need to stop the tillage and apply the principles, keep armor on the soil, have diversity in your garden, grow flowering species to attract beneficials, and you'll be amazed at how not only the soil changes, but the taste profile of the vegetables and the products you're growing will change. And you will actually be able to taste a significant difference once you have a healthy, functioning soil.
Interesting. All right, Gabe, we've been on here for a while. Is there anything I missed that you want to add, or is there anything that we didn't get to?
Well, I just encourage people everywhere to support farmers and ranchers who are moving down the regenerative path. If you're not able to have your own garden, shop at a farmer's market and ask those suppliers there what practices they use. How do they grow and raise the products that you may buy for your family? And then support them with their buying dollar, because the more consumers we have aware that their buying dollar really makes a difference and can make a difference on how not only food is grown, it'll affect the profitability of that farmer ranch, but it'll also affect all of society positively because of the positive impact regenerative agriculture can have.
No, absolutely. You said it great. We'll add a in the description, we'll add the websites you talked about, the Understanding Ag, the SoilHealthAcademy.org, Nourished by Nature, so people can find those easily.
I appreciate that.
So perfect. Is there any, if they wanted to reach out to you, if someone wanted to contact you, what would be the best way?
Yeah, the best way to contact me is gabe@understandingag.com.
Perfect. I'll add that to the description. I can't even talk today. I'll add that to the description as well. Gabe, I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Pleasure talking to you today.
Thanks, Gabe.
Have a good day.
You too.